Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, March 22nd, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, if you're into it, if you dig it, if you subscribe to it, if you listen every week, if you tell your friends about it, you can rate and review this show on iTunes and Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everybody why you like it. It'll mean a lot to me. It'll make me feel good. It'll make me feel good about myself and a lot of the life decisions that I've made so far in my 35 years. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 111, and I have a very special guest this week, a man by the name of Kyle Grooms, a very funny comedian out of New Jersey. And we talked for a good while and we had a good conversation, and we're going to get to that in a bit. I'm going to give you some plugs for the week. On Wednesday, March 25th, I will be at Lucy's Lounge on a show called Bitches Brew, hosted by Naomi Caravani. That's going to be at 8 o'clock p.m. There's going to be music. It's going to be comedians. It's going to be fun. It's a cocktail lounge, because when I went to the website, they just had cocktails. So I'm assuming that's what it's going to be. And that's in Brooklyn, New York, once again at 8 o'clock p.m. Thursday, March 26th at 7:30 p.m., I'm going to be at Levity Live. I make my triumphant return to Levity Live in West Nyack, New York. There's going to be a special show. I'm a part of it. It's the Kevin Longto Memorial Scholarship Fund, scholarship fundraiser. And it's going to be, Bill Burr is going to be there. Paul Verzey is going to be there. Me, some other really funny comics that I don't know about yet, they're going to be there. And it's going to be a night to remember. So if you live, in the general area, if you live in the tri-state area and you want to start your weekend, if you want to get turned up on a Thursday night, come to this show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Bill Burr, Paul Verzey, and me, that's already an action-packed show. But to have other people involved that are very funny, surprise guests, like, you're going to hear their names. If you'd be at the show, you can hear blah, blah, blah person. You can be like, oh, shit. So the whole night, you're going to be like, oh, shit. And then you're going to be laughing. So that's going to be a great time. And it's going to raise money for an awesome cause. And I'm very humbled and excited to be a part of that. So that's good. Those are the plugs for the week. And I'm going to talk about a couple other things. Music was really huge this week. Kendrick Lamar's album got leaked early. iTunes or some shit put it out on Sunday night. It was supposed to come out this week, but it came out on the, when did it come out? Like on the 16th or 16th. Yeah. I think this album is fantastic. It's his second proper album. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, this guy has never really, he's never dropped the ball. I'm not too familiar with his pre Kendrick Lamar EP projects, but I mean, you got the Kendrick Lamar EP, Overly Dedicated EP, which is really an album because it had 16 songs on it. Section 80, Good Kid, Mad City, and now this To Pimp a Butterfly. Five really amazing projects. Section 80 to me started, I guess, like, if you would almost say like a trilogy, it's not really, it's not a trilogy, but it's insofar as an album being a concept album, which Section 80 was, obviously Good Kid, Mad City was, and now this To Pimp a Butterfly project, also a concept album. I think a lot of people have to, after listening to this album, I think I may have listened to it about three or four times. I listened to it twice the day it came out, and then I had to fall back because that shit was just, it's about as dense as Pharoah Monch's last album, the PTSD. I would say it's as dense as that. It's a little more, I don't know if I want to say it's darker. It's very funky. Like what's the name of the first record? It's Wesley's Theory, I want to say it is. I didn't know I was going to go in on this joint, young. I ain't really know I was going to do that. But, Let's see here. Section 80 To Pimp a Butterfly. Yeah, Wesley's Theory is the first record on the album. And when you have a project start off when you're using a sample that says, "Every nigga is a star." Like, I mean, this album is really, really black. And it reminds me of this. And I was thinking about the Rembert Brown. Is it the Rembert Brown piece that he did for Grantland when he was talking about the Black or the Berry, and how he compared it to the Nina Simone Young, Gifted, and Black song? And I tried to, we got in, Kyle and I kind of talked about it a little bit, but he hadn't heard the album when we recorded. This album is specifically for black people. And I would say it's like, even though Pharrell is new black, he said this album is unapologetically black, and it's exclusive. It's exclusively black. And it's not like white people, y'all can't listen to it, but it's like, if you want to know the struggle, you'll listen to this album, and it's amazing. And it gives you that window into the black experience, what the modern day black experience, and the institutional oppression is inherent in there. But I think Kendrick wants there to be like self-love and he wants to uplift the black race. And I think a lot of people that were dogging him for that Billboard interview, I think they're now going to have to walk back a lot of their statements on that. I don't think, and I remain steadfast in just being a fan of this guy's music and knowing, having an idea of, I won't say that I know everything this guy's talking about. I'm assuming you guys can help me out. Lucy, to me, I'm assuming is the devil when he talks about Lucy. I'm assuming that. If I'm wrong, you know, you tweet at me, let me know, email me at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. But there's certain things that it is what it is. Damn, it's a fucking cliche, but this is a very black album. And he used a lot of people that I like, even though Anna Wise is white, I love her music, and she adds a lot of flavor to it, her own style. But Bilal, like some of my favorite people, Bilal, Thundercat, Anna Wise, like when I saw them on the Colbert Report, I mean, that's like, and I was telling Ray Sani a couple of weeks ago, I mean, that's a music nerd's I don't know. Like, it's like a Narnia for music nerds. Like, this really mainstream artist is going on a mainstream TV show and putting these people out there, not because of who they are, but because they're talented and they deserve to be on that platform. More people should know. If you don't know who Bilal is, Google that dude. He's been around for a long time. The last 15 years, probably even more than that. His album, what the fuck is the name of his first? Jesus. See, now we're going down a rabbit hole. And you know that I do that sometimes on the show. If you're a new listener, sometimes I go down rabbit holes and this intro might be longer than normal, but I don't think we'll get that crazy. I don't know why. Why don't I know the name of his first album? That's so weird. I'm looking him up and I'm doing some soft shoe. Firstborn Second is the name of the album, you stupid idiot, Chris. Wow, really beating myself up. Firstborn Second, 2001. Love for Sale was unreleased. It got shelved, but it's dope if you can find it. Airtight's Revenge, to me, is his best work. That came out in 2010, like his most cohesive, strong, like, just viciously strong. And the storytelling that this guy, the writing on the album is really great. So he's a part of the album. And so it's really awesome. It's really fun. And I was listening to it yesterday again. And it's so good. Like it's very layered. I'm a fan. I've been a fan of this guy for at least 4 years, and it's great to see him ascend to this level. And one of the best things I heard about the album is Andy Klein from the Three Guys On podcast. I had to share his Facebook status because I'll read it to you if you guys haven't seen what he said about it. But it's really cool to see all these think pieces about it, and people, you know, try to dissect this thing. And it's a part of making hip hop fun again. And hip hop's in a really, really good place right now. I mean, just within the last couple, this year alone, if you start with Joey Badass, and you got Kendrick, you got Action Bronson's album, which is coming out this week. It's that one's good. Like, that's a really good, Mr. Wonderful is the name of the album. Like, that's a really good release, a really good major label debut. Kanye's coming out. It's just great to be a music fan right now. Okay. Andy says, I just listened to Pimp a Butterfly, which is fantastic. Maybe it's a sign of the times, but during Kendrick's interview with Pac, I kept expecting him to break in with a plug for Adam and Eve or stamps.com. So it was like Kendrick was doing a podcast at the end of the album, because there's an interview that Kendrick has with Pac, and it's sort of like with clips that were cut up from a Tupac interview. And it's like supposed to have this spiritual, it's cool. It's at the end of the Mortal Man, song, the last song on the album. And, it's just funny. Cause like, yeah, that is like a podcast. So I think this album, it's just great, man. And it's really, if you're a fan of Kendrick Lamar, you're going to like it. And probably one of the best, episodes that I've been on with J.O. Covan, we talk about Kendrick Lamar, and he says Kendrick's overrated, and he's not. I think he's one of the greats. I think he surpassed a lot of the people that he looks up to. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I'm not going to name any names, but I think just his body of work alone he surpassed people that he idolized. Where else do I want to go with that? I thought I was on a trail, but I don't think I am on that trail anymore. So give Kendrick a listen. What do you think, guys? Do you like it? Do you like the album? Let me know. Let me know how you feel about it. I'll just say that I felt this album made me feel real. That my favorite song, All Right, that record, All Right. God, if you're an adult black male, or if you're just black and you've lived a little bit, no matter what your station in life is, that song is fucking, whew. I got emotional like the first few times I listened to it. I mean, I ain't crying nothing, but I was just like, damn, he really went in on that record, the whole thing. So To Pimp a Butterfly, classic already. It's only been out a week. It's a there's my hot take on hot fresh take on this album. It's really great. My buddy Tron, he released friend of the podcast. He released an album called Dark Ocean, and he released it's a double EP with his brother DVD. Dark Ocean and Glitch Forever. I'm going to get him back on the show and we're going to talk about his new project. But if you're a fan, if you know who Tron is, go back to like episode somewhere in the 30s. Listen to his episode. Go to Tron and DVD SoundCloud page. I don't think the album's, I don't know what they're doing, because I looked at the website and it's some older stuff, but they got a concert. They had an album release show last weekend, and they're going to be in Brooklyn in April. So if you go to sicklifemusic.com, you can get their album. You can get their touring schedule. I'm going to get, but I don't think it's officially updated yet. So I don't know what they're doing with that album, but he was kind enough. Tron was kind enough to send me a link to the new album and the new albums, the double EPs rather. And it's really good. I told him, I tweeted that it was black excellence. So I hope that they, put that out there and, you can get a hold of that. And it's really good. And I like what those brothers are doing. Those young brothers like what they doing. I didn't go to the movies this week. I'm hoping I might. I really want to see It Follows now. And I'm thinking I might try to see that maybe today or sometime this week. It's like a horror movie, but it's a lot of people are seeing this movie and they're talking about it on Facebook and they seem to really be impressed by it. So that's one that I want to see. I did watch a movie on Netflix called Our Vinyl Weighs a Ton, and it's about Chris Manick, also known as Peanut Butter Wolf, who started Stone's Throw Records, and it's really good. If you're a fan of hip hop, you're gonna love this movie. It's a documentary. It's on Netflix, and it's got Madlib, Kanye West, Quali, and it's really good. It talks about the evolution of this record label, what it means to be independent. Excuse me, and it's really, really good, and it's on Netflix, and I think you'll enjoy it. If you're like me and a fan of hip-hop, you're going to love Our Vinyl Weighs a Ton. This is Stone Throw Records. I think you'll dig it. We'll get to... Oh, video games. Okay, so I had my second sit-down of playing The Order 1886. I kind of, like, felt like, about it. You know, not as mad, because I only paid about $30 for it. I played a couple hours in. I really like it. It's fun now. It's more like it's a story, and you do have the repetitive shooting, but it looks fucking great. And maybe I'm another one sit down or two more away from finishing it, because when I start to play it, I'll binge, and then I died a lot. You know, it takes some time to figure some of the shit out. So at least like when you die, you go back and you fight. So I died a lot. I played that shit for like 3 hours, I think. I don't know, but I played a long time. I've been playing 2K15, and I liked so fucking good. I'm playing with the Cavs now, and it's not really cheating because they're like, I mean, they're eighth. I'm ranked like seventh or eighth in the league right now, in the entire league. But I'm gonna play as the Cavs, and then I'm also gonna start a franchise with the Timberwolves too. So like a team that's a young team, and I want to try to build them up and take them to the top. All right, so I've blabbed enough. I'm gonna bring into Kyle Grooms. Kyle Grooms is one of these guys. He's been on, he's had tons of credits. He's been on Comic View, Last Comic Standing, Chappelle Show, tons of other things. But Kyle Grooms is one of those comics that when I first started, I was looking at comedians. You know, before you start comedy, you have an idea of what it's like, you know, the people that you really liked when you were a kid and everything like that. But Kyle is one of these guys, like I saw him, I was like, oh, this guy is cool. He's a black dude, smooth delivery, very funny. And then he's got his own way of doing things. And, I was drawn to that. And I had his first album, Jersey Devil. And I just thought the guy was cool and really funny. And it was really neat to get to work with him this month in upstate New York, and just to watch him work and watch. He's just a pro. He's a pro is what he is. And I always like talking to veteran comedians, guys that have been doing it for a really long time, and to get their perspective on a lot of things. So I really had a great conversation. We went to his condo apartment. He lives in these towers right along the Hudson. And it's really nice. And I just hung out with him and his daughter, who was very adorable. I think that I might have gotten a toothache by looking at her so much, because she was so sweet. And the kids, fuck. It just makes me want to think that maybe I could have kids one day. But I really appreciated his perspective on a lot of the things that we talked about. And you'll hear that. So this is me talking to the very funny, the very talented Kyle Grooms. We're gone. Yeah, so I haven't been in this area in like, I want to say maybe 3 or 4 years.
Oh, really?
Are they building up even more down here?
Yeah, like maybe two lots down, they're building another condo. And this condo's kind of beefing because it's going to do something with the water system, and they just worry about it. It's near a gas line, and they fear if there's a rupture, you know, it's like they don't want any more, you know, people always get, they don't want, God, never want anything else new built, you know.
Because that Avalon thing happened, what, a month or two ago? Was it earlier this year?
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
House made of twigs and shit.
Is that what it is? Because I live in Hackensack, and they just threw one up, like, just so fast. Yeah. And I was like, is the same thing going to happen? They charge people all that money.
Making them with shitty material.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know those houses are made of shit. When like even like your the thing that holds your toilet tissue, it'll pull out of the wall easily. So, you know what I mean? It's like cardboard houses, man. Yeah. But they look pretty. Like you see them, you're like, oh. But you'd be like, man, this floor is wood underneath here.
So. Yeah, I just noticed just driving down, because I think one of the last times I went down here, I went to a birthday party, and then for some odd reason, this was the only area that was playing Notorious, the Biggie movie.
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of weird for this to be kind of like an upscale area, for them to be just like playing this really urban movie.
Mm.
And I remember going to... I was out with this girl, and I took her out, and we went to P.F. Chang's.
Mm-hmm.
And the P.F. Chang's was, I guess, somewhere on the Hudson.
Yeah, it's a little further down.
Further down. Yeah, and it was intense. It was like a nightclub. It was just like, I was like, really? All of this in
But you know Edgewater? They call this Edgewater Rapper's Row.
Really?
Yeah, because all like Ice T, okay, you know, all them people from Love and Hip Hop,
all of
Joe
them
Buttons, a lot of people live like up. I know Angie Martinez lives here.
Uh huh.
You know, like we go to Whole Foods, you see Tyson Beckford.
Okay.
Freaking, yeah, it's a lot of people in this area.
Do you think? I wonder why. Is it just it's cheaper to live over here?
It's close enough to New York. Yeah. And it's a little cheaper, and it's, you know.
I don't.
New York's right there.
Yeah.
But you're still in Jersey flyness and don't have to be all on the turnpike and shit.
Because it's nice. I never got why people always gave Jersey a bad rap.
Oh yeah.
Because my undergrad was I went to Mount St. Mary's, and it's in Emmitsburg, Maryland. And you got like most of the kids that went to Catholic schools in that region, whether it was Baltimore, D.C., and all of them went there. And it was kids that from Jersey there, and they seemed to be good kids. And
yeah, and there's a lot of Catholic schools. A lot of people go to Catholic school in Jersey, even if they're not Catholic. They're
going to
Catholic schools. So I think maybe because Jersey is a lot of Italians.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, this is where I always say Jersey, when people get money, they come to Jersey.
Okay. Because is it cheap? I mean? Like, is it cheaper to live? Because I'm in Bergen County, and I'm in near, like, I guess you see, like, neighborhoods like Oradell, Tenafly, and all that. Like, I'm more afraid to be driving in those areas at night than I am to be in Newark.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm a black dude, and it's like, oh, my God. But, I don't get it. I love it. I love Jersey. I mean, I'm originally from the Maryland, D.C. area, and a lot of aspects of it seems like home to me, but I just never get why people just talk so much shit about Jersey.
I mean, I get it. We have a bad rep. It's stereotyping.
Because you talk about it in your act.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. You know, I think since that SNL bit where... this was way back.
Oh, okay.
When he was with Eddie Murphy. Italian guy.
Oh, Mike Piscopo.
Joe Piscopo.
Yeah, yeah.
When he goes, "You from Jersey?" I'm from Jersey. Like, you know, that's what, I mean, from me, because I'm older.
Yeah.
That's when people start, "You from Jersey? Oh, what exit?" That's like an old hack.
Yeah,
joke.
Yeah.
Because people hate Jersey because if they ever get caught in Jersey driving in Jersey is a motherfucker, man.
Like
jug handles. If you're not from here, you don't know how to handle that.
Right.
Like, you mean I want to make a left, but I got to go straight, go right, turn around just to go left. That blows people's minds, man. People can't deal with it.
Yeah, I'm like my, I guess how, what's the best way for me to frame it? Just like my fatness. Like I'm in a transitional period where I'm like trying not to die, you know. So I'm just like, I went like my yesterday.
Good luck,
my, yesterday was my first. You know, like yesterday was my first day back at the gym, and so I'm just trying to rededicate myself, get my shit together. And I would think, like, sometimes when I would drive down Route 17, and there's something like there's like a Shake Shack somewhere, you have to strategically, it's like, do I really want Shake Shack that much to like go all the way up, then go take an exit, the U-turn, go all the way back down? And it's like, is it really worth it? Is it really worth it?
Jug handles are a good deterrent. You know,
help
you keep your diet.
Yeah.
Make the food hard to get to. You can see it, but, you know.
And I know when I first moved here, it's like, I live right pretty much a few minutes from the GW Bridge.
Oh, sweet.
And so before I moved here, if you make the wrong exit or you get in the wrong lane, you have to go to Connecticut. It's like, I have to go, or to another state. You're just like, I'm done.
Yeah, because
you're just like, Jesus. I had a GPS.
You end up in freaking.
Yeah. So where in Jersey did you grow up?
I grew up in, partially in Linden and then in Perth Amboy. I was born in Elizabeth, but when my brothers and sisters and my family lived in Elizabeth, I was sent to Georgia.
Oh.
And then when I was in Georgia, they moved to Linden. And when I came back to go to school, I was in Linden.
Why did they move you? Are you the youngest?
Yeah, I'm the youngest.
Okay.
My father died. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was old enough to go to school or have a sitter.
Okay.
I was the one that had to be, you know.
So you stayed with your grandma?
They sent me to Georgia to be with my grandparents.
Was it just at, like, baby Kyle? Or just, like, were you, like, old enough to realize I'm leaving?
No, I was conscious of... Okay. Oh, no, I wasn't conscious of me leaving.
Okay.
But I was conscious of Georgia. That's, like, my first I guess things I remember about life is Cuthbert, Georgia.
You know okay, what, I mean? What town is it?
Cuthbert.
Cuthbert. What, yeah. What is that near? Like any like big like major city?
It's south of Columbus and west of Albany. It's okay. It's like on the Alabama border. It's like southwest Georgia, country as hell.
Okay. Okay.
And we lived in the woods, so it was like, yeah,
what
dirt
was,
road.
What was that like?
Wow, it was amazing. Like now for me, it was amazing because yeah. I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. Even as a kid, it was amazing. You know, yeah. You're in the woods, man, on a dirt road. But as a kid, you could take it because that's what you're used to. You
yeah. know?
And there were no other kids around. We had the Filling Game family lived like a mile up who had kids my age. But for the most part, I like hung out with chickens, dogs, pigs. You know what I'm saying?
Is that on your first CD?
I may mention it, but
okay.
But I don't know if I'd go in depth with
it. Because for some reason I felt like I knew that about you, but just not in depth. But I know when I was a kid, I mean, just being a quote-unquote city kid from the burbs, and we would go, my parents are from North Carolina, and it would be different. Yeah, like, yeah. You would go, the big thing when I used to stay down there was to go to, you go into town, you go into Reidsville, North Carolina, there's a Food Lion, there's a Kmart, and there's a Roses, and there's like a shop, that's like the Target of yeah. of that era, and you would just we go to the arcade. That would be
yeah, that's like you doing it. You going to the big
that's
city?
That's the shit.
And yeah,
like, and like going like my I used to collect football cards, and the big thing would go to the flea market, and I was good. I don't feel like I missed anything. Yeah. I think maybe a kid nowadays. What was that recent Spike Lee movie? That
one, the Brooklyn one?
Yeah, what was it? When he, oh my God, I hate when I get, Clark Peters was in it, and he was a priest, the preacher. Jesus Christ.
You know, I haven't seen maybe Spike Lee's last three or four films.
You're not missing much. He's got, I have a story that I think you may have heard it, but I have a story about Spike Lee, but I still think he's one of my favorites, but just being a fan, there's still some things that he's doing that are really great, but it's just like he has a lot of axes that he's grinding. So it's like She Hate Me. Did you see that one? Maybe like
I know of it, but I haven't seen
it. But it was just about so many different things, and it's like if he actually focused on one or two, it would have been like, oh, all right, yeah, I get it. But
he tried to mix a bunch of different issues in one.
Yeah, and it was just like, this is too much, Spike. But what the hell? I'm going to get to it. It was, anyway, the kid in that movie was from, I believe it was from Atlanta, and his grandfather didn't have any of the, like, anything cool. Like, he just had his, iPad, and he was just like, I'm out of it. But he's still in 21st century Brooklyn, but he just made it. It just was like a Red Hook summer.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It was like shock value for the kid. I don't know why I went on that. So you went to school. What was that like down there? Was it,
I didn't go to school there.
You didn't go. Oh, you didn't go to school.
I didn't go to school. When I was old enough to go to school, to kindergarten, which at then at the time you were six, I came up here, and that's when I entered kindergarten. And
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Was there any type of like fish out of water, any type of transition that you have to deal with? Like,
the only thing is, I used to get in trouble a lot because I would talk to my teacher about chickens and pigs and dogs and, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
because that was your life.
Rattlesnake almost bit. Like, I would tell her stories of the country. And my mother, but he just talks about pigs and chickens and, you know, that type of stuff. But, then I just started learning the city. You know, I still like to hang in the woods. Like, you know, if we have any woods near our house, I was in them. You know?
Yeah. there's something comforting about that, too. I mean, I think just even living over here and doing what we do in the city and working and everything, it's still, to me, it's like there's still a serenity involved. Like, it's like you're not over top of each other and you're not, it's just the bad smells. And I just feel like, I mean, that's how I feel personally. I don't know.
And there's power in that nature, man.
Yeah.
That's where we're from. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're freaking forest dwellers.
Yeah.
So all this shit is artificial, really. You know?
Yeah, it's true. Like, yeah. I was driving, like, it. The more, because I'm just starting to do the road now. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, we didn't really travel that much. It would be to North Carolina because my parents were, like, busting their ass to put me in private school. But it, like, now getting to see America, it's almost, for the most, it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
I was talking to my dad.
We're still in the woods. Look at this shit. If these trees weren't here, we'd be in the fucking woods.
And when you see something like that, it's like, ah. And I'm not like a big tree hugger, but it's just like, oh, there's not a Walgreens there. There's not a Target there. I don't know. I kind of have that, there's kind of a, I guess a yin yang. It's like, okay, I'm away from this, that's cool, but then there's a Target here, so I feel safe. I feel there's some type of safety there, but it's weird. I don't know what
I couldn't live there now. I'd be bored out of my fucking mind, man. I could curse on this thing?
Yeah, of course.
Bored out of my fucking mind.
I mean,
it's beautiful. I'm glad I got to experience it. I was a kid, but I remember going to, like, Albany was like the big city.
Okay.
Yeah, and Atlanta would have been like fucking Paris or some shit. You know what I mean? Do we need a passport?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. So you used to go down every summer. That's the regular. Like, a lot of people do that, right?
You go down every summertime. A couple times I stayed with my grandmother and my uncle was there. So we had go karts there.
Oh.
We would teach us how to play baseball.
Mm.
And so, I mean, it was fun. Like, it wasn't.
Fish anything?
We did. We fished. It was mainly just like baseball. We go to town.
Did they have nets in North Carolina?
They had nets. They had like everything.
Like, you know, you're like,
it wasn't super intense, but I remember it. And we used to just baseball, football, because my aunt and my grandmother lived next door to each other, and it was just a big wide field, and they'd have like, what was it, feral cats, or cats that are like outside, right? Like Marc Maron's cats and shit.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, like they're not really, I don't know, I was trying to think of that, I was trying to sound cool. Feral cats, where they're stray cats, some of them would, they be around and my aunt would feed them.
I think of them being mating and shit, cats that are out fucking ready to fuck.
They probably do that. That's probably what they do. And we would chase the kittens around and stuff. We wouldn't do anything bad to them.
Stray cats, you would.
Yeah. And they were, you know, in the country.
Did you have BB guns?
No, we didn't have that. We had war guns.
Oh, okay.
And, the closest thing to that would be, like, when Ghostbusters was hot, we'd pretend to be Ghostbusters. We set up the house, set up certain rooms in the house, and then, you know.
Oh, okay.
Do shit like that.
I forgot, you're, like, how old are you?
I'm 35. I just turned 35.
Yeah, you're 10 years.
You got 10 on me. Yeah. We didn't have those. We had the water guns. We had, I did have a Nintendo. The one summer I had the Nintendo down there. And so that was, you know, it was fun. And then, you know, then I started playing sports and stuff. And like, yeah. But this isn't about me. So you're back in Jersey. And so what were you like as a kid? If you were to look back now, would you see yourself like, I can look back now and see, like, oh, there were inklings of me wanting to be a comic.
Yeah, I could see it. I lived on a dead end street in Linden, and I was like the P.T. Barnum of that dead end street. Like,
sure.
I would always get the neighborhood kids doing something new, building go karts. I mean, one time I made a haunted house in my basement.
Oh, wow.
Because my basement was like cold and gray, and, you know, there was like a little entrance you could walk in. It was a little cubby hole behind the steps, you know, and it was good places to hide. So I charged the kids like a quarter apiece. And, you know, my friends, you know, we all, you know, got our old Halloween costumes. My sister's still mad at me today because she had a Barbie doll, like one of them Barbie makeup heads, and I took the head and hung it It painted like it was bloody, like, you know.
Did you get in trouble?
Nah, just my sister was pissed off. She's still pissed off at me about this. So I made it, like, you know, put paint, like it was a dead head hanging.
Yeah.
And I think I was a hunchback. My friend was Dracula, and we were scaring the shit out of kids. Kids ran out of it crying. We were carrying axes and shit. It was like,
Jesus Christ.
My friend was lighting off fireworks. It was...
Damn.
It was a good time.
That's intense. So, what Linden was like, just like suburban.
Yeah, you know, Tom, Linden.
What county is that in?
Linden is Union
County. Okay, all right.
Linden was good at the time because we lived in a black neighborhood, but parents had. We saw everybody's parents went to work. You know, bam, mother, father.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They had General Motors. Sharing plow, you could work at Ford, all these places. The work was everywhere. You could work on the turnpike.
Okay.
And, you know,
what is this, in the 80s?
70s, 80s.
Uh-huh.
But by the 80s, the shit started shutting down. Like, towards the end of the 80s, you could see the plane landing. You know what I mean?
Oh, is that like shift, like the stuff, like, is that what Gung Ho was about? As far as automobiles are concerned.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, like, that's what we had, yeah.
Okay.
And then crack came in.
Wow.
Jobs went out. And the avenue I used to play on and walk my dog and all that completely changed. I do a that joke sucks. Where it says it looked like they were shooting a Thriller video. Like, after I went back from school, they opened up a Church's Fried Chicken.
They had Church's in Jersey?
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know they got that far.
A lot of the corner stores, Mr. Lee, like, you knew the guy at the corner store, Mr. Lee. You knew his family. You knew the church. You know, like, it was like we knew each other.
Yeah, because you're speaking on something that doesn't seem to be here anymore. And I don't want to be like, we're not that. We're not old, but it's just sort of like back in my day.
Mm.
I remember when I was a kid, like, my dad missed a handful of games, and if he wasn't there, my aunt was there, and it was just like I was around kids who had parents that participated in their lives, you know. They were like, they were there, they were involved, they were at the meetings. You couldn't get your report card unless your parent was with you.
Yeah.
And they would sit you down.
Damn, that's serious.
Yeah, like in high school, they would sit you down, like the first semester you get your first report card. They put tarp on the gym floor, and all the teachers would get around and in the little desk, and you come up with your dad, your parent, or whatever, and they look at your name, and like they open up the grade book, and like, this is what he did. And my dad would look at me. I was a pretty good student, but you know, it was pretty intense. And they're like,
you know what, I think we did do that because we had parent teachers conference
there,
where the parent would have to come in. Yeah, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And he'd be like, he could do better. He said, can he do better? Yeah, I think, you know, I would get a good grade, and the teacher would say, I think he could do better.
Wow.
And my dad, is that true?
Yeah, I guess
so. Wow. So it was, you know, it was there. It was like, it was sports. It was the plays, whatever. The parents were there. And my listeners hate this, that we mention this all the time. But I always appreciated my parents and the sacrifices that they made, but it didn't fully dawn on me until I was early 20s, like maybe 24, 25.
Mm-hmm.
I was ran a before and after school program in suburban Chicago.
Oh, nice.
And you got to see, and it was public school, and it was funded by, it was like the Park District was involved with the school system.
Barack Obama ass nigga?
No, I wasn't organized. No, dude, I was just trying to pay my rent and do plays. But Barack was, he didn't go to Northwestern, did he?
He was an
organizer down there
in the community.
Nah, he was in the South Side. Nah, I'm not
as
cool as he was. No, I was in, it worked out like when I was in my first year in grad school, I was staying in the dorms out of Chicago, and I told my parents, I was like, hey, I want to stay out here. I want to live out here during the summer. And they was like, well, you get a job, we'll help you out. So I got two jobs. I got one job teaching at a theater camp and another job at Best Buy. And it worked it out, and I kept working with the Park District in the summer. And they got me a job once I graduated, like running the program. And so you get there from 6 to 8 in the morning, start school. And then in the middle, I was working at I was working with another entity of the school system with, like, special needs.
Okay.
And so I was there 12 hours a day. So I got to see all the kids, how they would act. And I would see the parents come in, pick them up. Some parents would be there on time. Mm-hmm. Some would be late. And it would just be just like, man, I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah.
And I was just like, damn. I was like, man, my parents were on it. Oh, you know, it's like I was fortunate, you know, like my dad would work two jobs. My mother worked mm-hmm. at night. And it was just like, damn, I appreciate it. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Good being there.
Yeah. And it was just, and so that kind of put things into perspective. Like everybody doesn't have that, you know.
Yeah.
But I went on a tangent. Why did we do that? No. But no, you touched on that, like just like the deterioration of the community, and not necessarily not just the black community, but in
general. Yeah, because the next generation didn't have it as they didn't have as much opportunities, I think, as the one before. Because, like, say Sharon Plow, for instance, in Jersey, they had 401k. Mm-hmm. You know, you could the company would match it, and but like the late 80s, they started hiring more Russians and mm-hmm. People from the Ukraine. And then I think now more Chinese are starting to work there. So a lot of brothers are running around here thirsty for really? Employment.
What kind of company is that?
It's a pharmaceutical.
Okay.
Yeah, Jersey had Shearing Plough, Merck, and Johnson & Johnson.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're just...
And they were employing a lot of people in, you know, back then.
Man. Because you...
They still are, but, you know, they cut. You know.
They cut back, and yeah. it's still messed up out there, like yeah. in that area?
Yeah, yeah.
Is your mom there?
It's not the same energy. You
it's
know
not the
mean?
Same.
You hear more shootings and yeah. everything now, you know. But there is good. Linden, they just elected their first black mayor.
Okay.
He's a guy that I grew up with. Well, he grew up with my brothers.
Oh, cool.
And I knew his family, and they're a good family, the Armstrongs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're good. Derek Armstrong, he's a good... They come from a good family.
Yeah.
And he's the mayor now, so they're going to
change.
Try to take it back to what it was. Like, even with, like, I look at stuff that's happening now with the police and all that stuff. Because mm-hmm. I played baseball for the Police Athletic League.
Okay.
Linden, did your town have that, a Police Athletic League? Mm-hmm.
We just have Boys and Girls Club.
Yeah, it's kind of a similar thing.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, are police officers involved in that?
No, it was just, I think it was just county.
Oh, yeah.
Just county people, stuff, yeah.
But this was like a police-run thing, and they were mm-hmm. our coaches. And so it kind of, I guess, conditioned us early.
Okay, yeah.
About, you know, I guess seeing police as human beings and us the same, I guess.
And they don't have that anymore, do they? Or is it just not
there? I don't think
there?
They have it. No, I don't know if they do. If it did, it changed, because... The baseball field that we used to play in is now a Walmart and a movie theater.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sucks, man.
Yeah, man. It was a sweet field, man. You know?
Because that's a part of... How's she doing?
She's
okay. No, I just want to make sure she's okay. She come. It's all good. It just seems like that's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just, you talk about, like, an area where there's just farmland, and then it just all, every you get that urban sprawl, or just that human footprint is just becoming
from
so
coast
rampant.
To coast.
Yeah, yeah.
From coast to coast. But I think it'll come back. It'll come back in different ways.
Yeah.
Like they say, Detroit, like Google's opening up offices in Detroit.
Oh, really? Okay.
A lot of the software companies open up offices in Detroit. And there's plans to, you know.
Because I know Big Sean, the rapper, he was on the Nightly Show, Larry Wilmore show, mm-hmm. and he was talking about how there's a lot of industry coming back, and there's people, you know, talking about, you know, doing stuff, and you just mentioned Google and everything. One of my favorite bits of yours was the Starbucks bit, where you kind of you're tackling gentrification, but it's I don't know if it's in a different way, but it's just like the guy that comes in that to order something, and he's making fun of it. He's like kind of like yeah. shitting on everything. Yeah. He's like, y'all hiring in this. What was that something that you saw? Because you talk about like New York being something when you were a kid, and then now it's a different way. Now it's like you hear people talk about gentrification all the time. Was it? I mean, is it always for the better? Do you think?
I don't know if it's always for if. It's New York is real sexy now. I like a lot of the things that they're doing. I like the energy, like people are smiling and stuff. But sometimes what you lose is that there's grit. You know, there's two sides: the dark side of the force that you know sometimes helps the light the fire in that. You know,
right?
And you don't want to lose that. There's art and there's something in that too.
You know,
that I like
because I was thinking. I was thinking about that Starbucks bit, and I was thinking about now. Just yesterday, they had that campaign, the Race Together.
Yeah,
like I don't. I'm trying to figure out what is it. Is it like you write Race Together on your cup and then talk about it?
From what I just heard of something brief on it, is the barista talking to you about race?
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
Because they can't even spell people's names right. And then they're just like, let's tackle this huge subject. But I was trying to look at the website when they were talking about it, and it was just like some of these like a conference or something that they had in St. Louis, Chicago, and New York, and it was like a town hall meeting type thing with all their partners. That's good that they're doing that, but it's just like you can't. People don't want to hear that and get their coffee.
Yeah, not at all. You come to coffee, you go to Starbucks to write your script.
Yeah,
have some coffee. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a quiet time. It's like a Starbucks known as a peaceful place. It's not the town hall. I don't know. I see what they're trying to do there.
It's like the corporation. It's not the corporation's job to be doing that. I guess it's more the institution.
It's a marketing to say, look, we care.
Yeah.
Starbucks is international. Right. Open up a Starbucks in the hood then if you want to.
It seems like where I'm from, they did, like my area was like, if I wanted to get in trouble, I could have, but there was, Jesus Christ, I had a lot of distractions, like positive distractions that just, you know, led me down a certain path. But they did open, Prince George's County, Maryland, like they say it's like the highest concentration of affluent black people. My family wasn't one of them. It's just a working class or whatever.
Were they work in D.C. or something?
My mom worked in D.C. And my dad worked in Virginia, and he ended up working in he's like a warehouse guy. So he worked at Sears for about 20 plus years, and then he was a receiver at Shoppers Food Warehouse, which is a grocery store chain in the D.C. Maryland Virginia area. And PG really didn't have any great malls, so we would always go to like Virginia, or we would go like another town or another county to go to the mall. And then when Magic Johnson bought up he built the shopping center where the Washington Bullets used to play, And now it's different, but now people, they kind of, you know how sometimes, every time we get something good, people mess it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, enough of that.
They mess it up?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a hood, like a hood Applebee's. Like, do you really want to go to Applebee's in the hood, in the neighborhood? Or you go to another city, like...
Because some of them Applebee's, like, I know the one in Inglewood is jumping. Like, you go in there...
There's one in Inglewood?
California.
Oh, California. Okay. I'm sorry.
The Magic Johnson in Inglewood, in Los Angeles. Like, you go in there, some sisters in there, they got a DJ playing some music. even the one here in Linden. The one in Linden, really? They play some music, and it's like, okay.
It's
like
popping.
Like, on a Friday night.
Yeah.
That one, there's a few of them around. They got them here in Jersey, too.
Yeah.
Like, I think Saraville or somewhere, there's one out there, too.
Is that further south?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know, like, I only know places by if I live there or near where I live or if I perform yeah. there. And I think I've been to, oh, God, Indian Lake. Like, oh, okay. Indian Lake. I think yeah. that's the furthest west that I've done a show in. And I went to, like, I went to a, what the hell is that? Like, a GIF. What the hell do you call that? They serve wings. And it's like Quaker Steak and lube. It's like a Quaker Steak.
Yeah.
And, like, they had
what, and they serve wings there, too?
Yeah, they serve, really? Serve wings. But I've it's heard that. Yeah. Crazy. But that might may as well have been, like... And that was, like, the country.
Shit.
Yeah. But
how was it, though?
It was pretty good. I don't think it was better than Hooters, but... but people... A lot of people hate Hooters.
Yeah, I was going to say, if your town's Applebee's, if the crowd... The town must be shitty.
Yeah. Like, I'm in the Hackensack Applebee's is... people beat it, but it's people from, like, Fairleigh Dickinson there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Hackensack. You guys got the hospital.
Yeah. Hackensack. The hospital.
Hackensack.
Hackensack. We got the mall. We got everything there. Like, but, so when you, what were you like as a kid? Were you just, were you like a nerd? Were you,
nah, were you I don't popular? Think I, no, I don't think I was a nerd. I was a traveler and shit. I was like Huckleberry Finn or some
okay.
shit. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I would walk for miles and miles and, you know, go on train tracks, get in mischief, throw rocks. You know, I would imitate the Little Rascals. You remember okay. the Little yeah. Rascals
yeah.
comedy?
Yeah.
That's who I was as a kid, building go-karts, fishing. And I even would still fish when I came to Jersey. I was still, like, going to One Acre Park in Linden
uh-huh.
and fishing and doing shit like that, climbing trees.
Yeah.
I did everything, man. Make spears out of those fucking, you know, those reeds that they have in Jersey, like, around the Meadowlands?
No,
They're like reeds. They're like, they look like bamboo. It's not real
oh,
bamboo,
okay.
but it's like, but they're sharp. And at the end, they get strong. And if you tape a knife to it, you'll make a nice spear out of it.
Jesus.
You can throw it, stick in the ground.
Jesus, we used to fish with that.
Bamboo, oh yeah, we yeah, we did that too. Yeah, we did that.
we did. So you were just kind of like a
yeah, I was out there
like a country guy, like a.
Yeah. And then I had older brothers too, so they were like, you know, they. I didn't hang with them as much, but they, you know, they would teach me things.
How much older were they than you?
My brothers are like 7 and 8 years older than me.
Okay, so it was a pretty big age
yeah,
gap.
So yeah, 6 and 7 years older than me.
So was it mainly just kind of you on your own, or with you
no,
and
I had
your friends?
My sister's 5 years older than me, my brother's okay. 6 and 7 years older than me, and I had another sister who's 10 years older than me.
And when and did you do sports and stuff? Or
yeah, I played baseball, I played football.
Varsity?
Yeah, I played varsity. I
okay.
sat bench a lot, but I was too much of a clown to get in the game.
Hey, man, but you made the team. Yeah, I was so bad and for freshman basketball that
oh, yeah,
I didn't even have to look at the cut
oh, wow.
shit. I was
oh,
just like, I
oh.
knew. Because everybody else had on shorts. I had on sweatpants. I peaked in 6th grade.
Oh,
like, I helped us get yeah. a CYO championship. Mm-hmm. And after that, I peaked in.
How were you built? And were you?
I was a big kid, but I wasn't. I was. What was I like? I was at basketball. I could shoot.
Mm-hmm.
I could play defense. I could shoot. Wasn't a great dribbler.
How was your height compared to the other kids in the school?
Normal, just really? Like a normal height mm-hmm. guy. Mm-hmm. Football would have been my sport. Like I would have been a good football player.
Why didn't you play?
I didn't want it anymore. I think my dad was too. He wanted it more than I did.
He wanted you to go to the NFL.
Yeah, and a part of me wanted it too, but I was like, I didn't like the practice. I was like Allen Iverson, like practice. but yeah, I wasn't really dedicated. Like I had a cousin that was. Two cousins that played in the NFL.
But they didn't want you to just play for fun. It's like, you gotta be Allen Iverson, or you have to be, like, you know, that's my brother's like that. He don't want his his son to just play for sport.
Yeah.
Let him play, like, just for fun. Mm-hmm. They want him to be wanting to go somewhere. I'm like,
it's, I mean, it was great. Like, it was good. And it was like socially, like, mm-hmm. integrating in, you know, just, it was good. It was good for me. But I had my dad on the podcast like a couple years ago, and he talked about how, like, because I was a big kid, and I had to play with the older kids because mm-hmm. of my size. And then I might have been in fifth grade. There were kids that were in eighth grade.
Damn.
They were bigger, but I was strong though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
And there was one, and I didn't back down from anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, there were, like, you know, my dad, you know, would tell me, they're double teaming Chris. That's why mm-hmm. the other guy's getting in the backfield. And, like, there are things like that. So he was proud of me, but I think I really found, because you got to get to a point where you're self-aware about what am I gonna be? Like, what kind of person? Not like, I'm going to work at the factory, or I'm going to be in a cubicle or something, but it was just like, I'm probably not going to play basketball. I'm probably not going to be an athlete. And then I started doing theater, and I got into theater basically because if you were in the drama club in junior high, you got to go to Busch Gardens, Williamsburg. And I had never been, and then I was just hooked.
Oh, because you got to go to Busch Gardens?
Yeah, and then I fell in love with theater and stuff. Mm. So I think right around the time when I was like maybe 18 or 19, my freshman year in college, like, I did this play, and my dad was like, oh, okay, this is really,
oh, wow,
this is who he is. This is who I am, Dad.
What was the play?
It was called The Misanthrope. It was a French play by Molière, and it was about this dude that was a misanthrope. He didn't really have any friends, didn't really care about life, and I was his friend.
Oh, wow.
I was like his, and I, it was just like a, like
in
a,
what language? Was it in English?
No, it was in English. It was in English. It wasn't French. No.
Was it with any accents or any kind of?
It was kind of like a stage standard. Like it was in rhyme. It was in iambic pentameter. So it was like ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da ba da. It rhymed. Uh-huh. So the translation was dope. So that made it flow better. But that was just like, I was like, okay, this is who I am. I'm probably going to be an actor. That's what I work towards. So was it anything like that for you? Was it just like, I'm going to be in show business? Or how did you get there? How did you get to
now,
where
I was, my art was always my main. Like, I wanted to work in art. I mm-hmm. went to L.A. in my 11th grade year, and my stepbrother's stepbrother and sister, their mother worked for Paramount Pictures.
Oh, okay.
She let us go on a lot at Paramount. And there was a guy in there drawing something, like a little animation cell or something. And I knew, and I was like, oh shit, I could do art for TV or something. That's what I want to do, art for television. Because, you know, I was always an artist. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's all right. You need to get it? You want me to?
No, I don't need to get it.
Okay.
I was going to want to do art for television, so I just kept that in mind.
Yeah.
When it was when it was time to look for colleges, I looked for an art school.
Okay. And where'd you end up?
Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that where you have your Miami roots?
That's where I got to South Florida. Going to the Art Institute.
And okay. What years are we talking?
I graduated high school in 87. Uh-huh. Went to Art Institute in 87. In the 2 year, I graduated in 89.
I'm trying to think of how either the Miami Hurricanes were down there, like the football
team. That's when the Hurricanes was in beast mode. Like
Michael Irvin, so you were there. Where did you go to any
the
games?
The club that they used to party at, we used to party at that same club, Club Manhattan.
Okay, what did you say? Did you see, who was playing? Was Michael Irvin there?
I'm trying to think. I know Gino Testaverde.
Vinny Testaverde?
Vinny Testaverde is a quarterback.
Okay.
Yeah. I was there from 87 through whenever, you know.
So you're probably at the beginning of that ESPN 30 for 30, like the U, because those were, I mean.
Luke, all that, that was that whole time.
Okay. But what was it like down there? Was that a culture shock at all?
Yeah, Miami was, man. Even though being, you know, living in Georgia, I mm-hmm. know Southern, you know, right, I know that. Right, right. Matter of fact, my first dialect was the Southern, you know, the Southern dialect.
Yeah.
You know? And plus, you know, my family's still in the South, but Miami was just some, like, I went in the club once and it was like, you had cars with wood grain. Some dude had a ceiling fan on the back of his car. It was like, women with their ass out, gold in their hair, and dudes twerking, like booty dancing, blah, blah, blah. Like, it looked like something out of a penitentiary movie. It was like crazy. Miami's got some other shit.
I still love
Miami for that reason.
Yeah.
It's like the bottom, like, boom, boom. Like, it's, there's something about it, man. It's like crazy, man.
I listen to Dan Levitard's radio show a lot. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all.
I know the name, Dan Levitard.
Yeah, sports guy. Yeah. And he always talks about, I mean, in general, people say they're not really, there's no real, like, Miami football fans or basketball fans, because there's just so much more to do.
Yeah.
People really don't care. Like, they would, like when LeBron was down there, people would come to games late, and because it was just so much culture, so much crazy
and
stuff.
It was going cool. On. Like, it was a cool thing at the time.
Yeah.
Miami's definitely fair weather fans.
Mm-hmm.
The real Miami Hurricane fans, and that they're like the people who grew up in, like, you know, Carroll City, Liberty City, Overton.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And some of those hardcore people who have real deep roots in Miami.
Right.
But a lot of other stuff is just people who's, you know, kids of immigrants who are a little detached from the legacy. You know what I mean? But they go with the popularity.
Do you have any sports teams you follow any at all?
I became a Dolphins fan being in Miami. And, I traded because I was a Giants fan in high school.
All right.
And then when I went to Miami, you know, you hang out there long enough.
You become,
tickets to the games, you know. I used to go to the game sideline, all that shit. So it was like, okay.
Yeah.
Miami Dolphins.
Okay. Is that the thing? I kind of just root for black quarterbacks now.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, that's just my, like, I just wish them well. Because I just hate the narratives they create for him, and then the coded language. Just like, I don't know if he can think that well when he...
They still doing that?
They still do that? It's just like with Jameis Winston now. Now, that kid's got a lot. He's got some shit on him. Yeah. But, I mean, it was mind-blowing to me when Steve Mariucci said on... He's like, he's the smartest quarterback I ever met in my life. And I was like, oh, shit. Because usually when it gets to, like, draft time, they'll try to mess up the dude's money. Like when Cam Newton was coming out, they were like, one guy said, was hating so hard, he was just, I think his smile is fake. This is like some gossip girl shit. Like, I just don't like his smile. I don't like anything about him.
Wow.
And it's just like, Jesus Christ, are you serious? But I try not to get too emotionally invested in sports. I enjoy the games. I have NFL, what is it, Red Zone. I have that on TV. Chill all day. Basketball. What are you, a Knicks fan or what?
Miami Heat.
Heat? You still with him?
Yeah.
That's good. So do you hate LeBron, or how do you feel about it?
Nah, really, I don't give a fuck that much. But I just...
Yeah, right.
I root for him. You know what I mean? I was there when Alonzo Moore and all these guys. I can party with these... Dudes, they used to come to my shows when I worked in Miami.
Nice.
Like, you know.
So did you know, like, Eddie Jones and
who'd I see
Tim
a lot?
Hardaway.
Tim Hardaway. I was
Sean Leonard.
Because he would have, like, a happy hour or some shit.
Nice.
Alonzo. I performed Alonzo's Summer Groove a few times. Hardaway was on the team. And
those are some good teams.
Hardaway's, yeah.
Glenn Rice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had dinner with Glenn Rice once because... Someone was trying to hook me up with his wife at the time's friends.
Okay.
And I was single at the time, and they wanted us to date. So I was like, yeah. It was no love connection, but we got it. And then some other people ran out on his bill, and I felt bad because I didn't order anything because I was performing upstairs. And I just came to meet the girl, say, what's up, how you doing, blah, blah, blah.
Let me ask you this. How do you feel about, like, when friends set you up? The two times that's happened to me, like blind dates, they just didn't go well. The last one was going pretty good until she just started talking about her boyfriend, and it was just kind of like, do you feel like you're in an awkward situation when that happens, when they try to set you up when you're really not interested? Or
no, I don't. I like it. You know, it's somebody giving you a set pick. You know,
okay.
Throwing a ball in the air. If you want to dunk it, you dunk it. But if she whack, what you gonna do?
It's
eat it. Either you gonna. Because
I met a girl that tried to set me up with somebody through a mutual friend of somebody that I didn't know. It was like too many variables going around. I was just kind of like, no. And then I met the girl at a show. Like I met the. Not the girl that they were trying to set me up with, but the friend of the girl. And I was like, oh, hey, nice to meet you. She's like, you didn't go out with my friend.
Oh, really?
And I was like, oh, sorry.
So it was a friend to your standards of hotness or whatever?
I don't think, not really.
Yeah, see, and every time a girl's picked someone for me, she was never what I, like, something I'm like, yeah. You may smash it, like, yeah, but.
Then it'll be like, what about you, though? And, like, she would be single, but she would try to set you up with someone.
That's awful.
And you kind of like her. But
that's that friend zone.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what about you? So I was like, But I always find that, I don't know what that. My cousin got married to the girl he got set up with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'd been with her for a minute.
Nice.
So Miami,
are you still single?
Yeah, I'm still single. I got a lot to work on. I'm working on myself, and then
all these women out here, man, are you fucking kidding me?
I know.
Is it you can find sex but not love or what?
I don't know,
girl,
man.
A wifey and shit.
I just want somebody. Yeah, I kind of would want a wifey, but you gotta get to know the person. I think I'm attracted to the wrong women. I think they're just like physically attractive, but then they're just husks of.
Oh, really?
One time I was kicking it with this girl after a show. She was, I think it was actually one of those alley-oops. And I didn't know it at the time, but then as it was happening, I was like, oh, I guess this is. I gotta bring this to the stage, but we were hanging out. We made out a bunch of times. We're at the bar and she looks at me and she says, you're a nice guy, aren't you? Like I had leprosy or something. Just not a new age disease, but just an old,
funny,
archaic disease. And she was just like, I was like, I don't know, bitch. But I was just like, I was like, okay, this isn't gonna go anywhere because I didn't try to choke her.
Oh wow, is that
so?
How were you behaving? Were you like opening doors and being extra?
No, I had just did a show. Like I had just had a big show.
Like a dream.
No, like it was just like I was like, hey, what's up? Having fun and kicking it. Or we was kicking it with some friends. Then me and her left to hang out together. We went out and kicked it. It wasn't like I was like, hello, how are you?
They're looking at the door for you.
Yeah.
Would you care for a beverage?
No, I was just like, you know, we just having a good time.
Yeah, you having fun, man. Yeah.
She's done. Like I saw, you know how you see, I don't know if you see this, but sometimes I'm not friends with her on Facebook. But I'm friends with the mutual friend, and she posted like a picture of her. I was like, damn. But she was bad, but you know, I guess I wasn't bad enough, but whatever. Where do we get?
Do you have a preference, racially, culturally?
I don't care.
Color,
no.
Shade, hue, motherfucker?
Nah, I don't. If she's like, I think if she's black, I think it's just more of a shorthand, and you don't have to. It is a shorthand. You don't have to explain certain things. Yeah. But other than that,
grow together.
Yeah. Like it's just like it's like. Yeah, I get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had a bad day. I understand. But I really don't like it. I think life's too short to really just like. Oh, she got to look like this. She got to be this color. I don't really care. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so Miami, we talked about Miami. We're doing pretty good. We're all right. What else did I have? I had some stuff. I had some gems here. Some stuff I wanted you to talk about. So how long did you stay in Miami? Did you just?
I stayed there. I got.
Were you
a
doing
job
comedy and, out there? Did you start out there?
Yeah, that's where I started.
Okay. What got you start? What's your origin story for comedy? That's what I usually ask when I have comics on. What is it? How does it? If you're the superhero, the guy that's, you know, now it's on TV, you're traveling the world and all this cool stuff. What was the thing that got you on stage for the first time?
My first time, I always wanted to do stand-up. I was talking about it. I was studying it. I was going to clubs, okay, going to the Peppermint Lounge, going anywhere, you know, like, just like seeing what the deal was with stand-up.
Uh-huh.
And
how old were you?
25.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And my girlfriend at the time, she worked for this hair salon in Jersey, Perth Amboy,
mm-hmm.
and she was having a fashion show. And she goes, I said, hey, can I do comedy at the fashion show?
Okay.
She was having a hair show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said I would do, let me do some stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes, So I wrote 15 minutes of stand-up. And
oh, really? So like, yeah. So this was like, was this your first time?
Yeah.
And so prior to that, you said this was very calculated. It wasn't just like, hey, Kyle, get up there. Like,
No.
It's okay, like, how long? What was your, like, leading up to that, the hair show, how long was that reconnaissance project going? How long was that?
I don't know. I think I may have thought about comedy for 6 months to a year, maybe okay. even more.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always loved it. I was always funny. I mean, I loved stand-up since I was 6 years old.
Yeah.
I would watch it and, you know. And I was always a funny dude. Like,
yeah.
I shit come to my mind. I think about it.
Right.
I could make people laugh. And, you know, I wanted to do it as a hobby. I
yeah.
already had a good career. So it wasn't like I
what
wanted
were you
to be
doing?
A star. I was working at a TV station doing graphic design.
Was this
I became an art director.
Univision. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was working at NBC. Where at this time, I was freelancing in New York for like NBC, CBS. Because I came back to Jersey for a couple of years just to, you know, work in New York as a freelancer just to experience that cool New York job.
Sure.
Shit,
yeah, know? Yeah.
And, she offered me... She offered me a spot on the show, and then when I got there, she said you could host it. So I said, "Oh man!" So now I had to host it. I'm introducing the break dances, and you know, being in funny in between. And then it was my time, and I ripped for 15 minutes.
How did it feel?
It felt great, man. Like once you get that first laugh, it was over. You
mm-hmm.
know? And then now I look back, and I'm like, was I crazy?
Yeah.
Like I look at what it takes to, for stand-ups now for your first time and
yeah.
you need to do it that way. I was like, I'm glad I didn't know any better. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
It's, sometimes it's good to have that ignorance and then
yeah.
when you look back, you're just like, oh.
It's like, yeah, okay, I'll just go do 15 minutes of comedy.
That's crazy. My first time was at Ochi's Lounge under Comics, in that basement under Comics.
Oh, yeah, Comics. Oh, yeah.
The 14th and 9th, defunct. And I just did like 4.5 minutes, and I got some laughs.
Mm.
It was just where it was just like, all right, and like you know, you had to pay to do the open mic, and at the end they did a raffle, and I won like $40, and I was like,
he was winning all around.
Yeah,
man.
And I called my parents, and they were like, how did it go? I was like, it was pretty good. I won a little cash and. From the bucket, and I was like, I think I'm gonna go back, and I never looked back. So you did 15 minutes, you got the laugh, and then what were the next steps after that? Like, did you?
I moved back to Miami,
mm-hmm.
and I found out where the local comedy spot was in. It was a place called Studio 183 in Carroll City.
Okay.
Carroll City is where Rick Ross is from.
Okay.
This place is like connected to a flea market. It's like hood, you know what I mean? Mark
yeah.
Dixon was the host. And anybody you see on TV now came through that. Mike Epps, Cheryl Underwood,
mm-hmm.
Ricky Smiley, Martin.
What are we talking about?
Bernie Mac did that room.
Mid-90s?
Yeah. Early 90s.
Early 90s?
Actually, mid-90s, yeah. From the, like, you know, maybe... 93 on or 94, but this was 95. So
yeah,
it was 95 when I was doing it.
Okay, yeah, because you were 25, so you're what, like,
I'm 45.
You're 10, so you're 10 years older than me. So I was like 15. Yeah,
mm.
yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
And
so you were born on an even year like me.
I was born in 69.
Oh, okay. Well, 1 + 1. All right.
But this room was like. Oh my God! Like even now, I look back, I can't believe it. It's like the, if you need to start at the bottom, it was
really
guys in the rafters who would yell at you like they were. It was like the Apollo, but concentrated. You
know, and they were just like
they had a crow's nest of dudes. Like when where like the next to the stage,
yeah,
a crow's next to goon, like ooh, you know, like
Jesus,
yeah, like you know.
Did you ever bomb there?
Yeah. Not my first two times. Like not my first. You know when I bombed? When I got cocky because I did well there.
Yeah.
Like three times in a row, and then I think like the fourth time I went up there, like, and I ate my ass. I bombed bad because I got cocky.
Oh, right? Okay. And yeah. So what was that? What did you do after that first bomb? Were you just like, well, like, why did you recover?
You're standing in the room, but you feel like you stink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you just come back again. You know, it's like now I got to get them again. You know what I mean? It didn't hurt as bad as I thought.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I bombed. Okay. I'm still alive.
Yeah. You know, I remember
I got shot. I'm still here.
I'm still standing. I remember bombing like in, it's not Karlstad, but it's like the Meadowlands area, and like off Route 17, this Italian restaurant, and it was a Halloween party. Do you know Shatara Curry?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she ran the room.
Yeah.
And I might have been a year or two in. It wasn't that long ago. Yeah. But I was just like, I got up there and it wasn't working. And Angelo Lozada was like, "Hey man, you got some good stuff. You're a good writer." He's like, "You're a good writer." And then I remember a couple years later, I featured for Orny Adams at Levity Live, and just the crowd just wasn't getting me.
Oh wow!
Like, it was like, I think that might have been.
And that's a hard room too.
It is. It's hard.
That energy in the room is like, it's so big and the ceiling's so high.
Yeah,
and they're below you. Like it's,
and they're eating because the food's good there.
You ain't cooking in that room. You could catch a break.
Yeah, like, and it was just like, and like he was hosting. And he was just like, "Hey man, you got some good shit. You got some good stuff. I don't know what's wrong with them." It was like two times within like a couple of years. So was that your home base for a while?
Yeah, so I started in Miami. And
okay.
Then, Studio 183, when Marvin wasn't there, he would let me host that room.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would start doing all the rooms, all the hood rooms around South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach. Sometimes I'd go up to Tampa, here, there, and third. I didn't get to Atlanta that much. And actually, I never did Atlanta until I did BET Comic View.
What is that like? Like, just, because I kind of just came, it's just a different era now where it's like, you kind of start, like for newer comics like me, you kind of start downtown, and then you're just doing all the bar shows until you're lucky enough to maybe get Duke Caroline's open for somebody or just anywhere else. But it's like, you're mainly doing bar shows like in Queens and Brooklyn and stuff. Do you feel like, it seems like it just makes you battle tested. I would assume that doing all the urban rooms just gives you this armor.
That's
that,
where you start. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's like just like the minor leagues or anything. It's a baseball field.
Yeah.
You don't go to Yankee Stadium and get up for bats. You start, you know, at a park with no net or whatever. You know what I mean? So that's what it is. The same thing for comedy.
Because
people want to be on TV their second week in comedy, but it's not.
Yeah.
You got to get out there. You start there, but you're not supposed to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of dudes stay there and they don't know. They don't, I don't know, they're conscious enough to try to get to that next level because we all still fighting for that, you know what I mean?
Every, like, because I can look at you and say, "Oh, Kyle's killing it." And then you're like,
"Oh, man, I need to establish some more a fan base," you know what
I mean?
You always.
Because for me, like, that weekend when I worked with you, because you were one, and I guess I'll circle back to that, but working with you that weekend was like, oh, okay, like, I knew of you, and we met, like, previously, like, one time, but I was like, that was one of my first, in a line of a few weekends, like, on the road. Like, I'm on the road, my manager says, you're going to go to this place, and you're going to go your hotel's taking. I was like, my hotel's taking. And so it's like you do those shows, and it's fun. Like, and I really get, like, I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen that Mike Birbiglia movie, Sleepwalk With Me?
Yeah.
When he gets his first hotel, mm-hmm. and I didn't jump on the bed or anything, but it was just like, I remember those moments, mm-hmm. and it's just like, I feel like you should enjoy the journey, even though you want to get to a certain place. Yeah. But it's like, so that was like fun for me. But like for you, like that was just like, oh, it's my week, a weekend, I'm gigging, doing some shows. Where did I want to go with that? I wanted you to kind of discuss a little bit, just speak on being a black comic. What does that mean to you? Is it, because when I first heard about you, I was like, okay, here's a guy that's cool and funny, but you're not like, you're not cooning it up. and you still don't have the air about you. You're just you doing you, but there's some artists in general that are just like, yeah, I'm black, but I'm not like them. What do you think about that or not? And is there a struggle for you? Like, do you think I'm throwing a lot at you.
Yeah, I get what you're trying to say, because it's either two types of black comics. Like, you're either smart and on this side of the fence, mm-hmm. as far as your conscience and how you're probably into hip hop, but not. Like, you couldn't perform in a hood club, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then there's a black comedian who performed probably in a lot of hood rooms who could cross over, but is still not considered a smart comic.
Because I feel like, for me, like, I can do I just go where they book me. Yeah. And, like, I feel really, I don't know what's the word, warmth, or feel fully accepted when my people accept me.
Oh yeah, that's
Like I did this private show for this dude that was this black dude that was turning 50. It was his 50th birthday party, and it was all black, and it was in my hometown. It was minutes away from my parents' house, so if I bombed, my mother could literally tuck me in. Like, so I was nervous, and I get there, and the birthday guy isn't there yet, and he comes in, he's a fireman, and everybody's like, oh, hey, it was a surprise. And then I was like, I'm Chris, I'm the comedian. He was like, the comedian? He's like, oh. And then I get up there finally, and I killed. Mm. And it was like the best feeling ever, like, because it was like, these people are like middle-aged people, they're black, they lived a life, and they got me, and I didn't have to change anything. So it was just like, I was like, wow. I was like, well, maybe I do have something, because I'm still at the point now, I've only been doing this 6 years, so I'm still at the point where I'm figuring stuff out, like, oh, now I get to do the road, now I can actually do the act that I cultivated in the city. And you know, still working on it, but just actually put it to use and work. So it's just like, oh, maybe I do have something. It's not necessarily like when you do well, you get. But that, I mean, I don't know, where am I? I'm babbling. But that was something that was important to me. Like, so it's like, if you can play a hood room and do well.
Yeah, I didn't struggle. Like, in the beginning, I started in all hood rooms. And to be honest, when I first started doing white crowds, I was a little like, that's when I got a little, oh shit, can I do this white crowd? I do some stuff about Color Purple, and I'm cursing, and I'm like, I have a brother. But then, I said, you know, I make people laugh. Like, in regular life, I don't really make black people laugh.
Right,
like,
right.
Just in casual conversation.
Yeah.
So I might as well just do what I do and communicate to the people the way I communicate to people, because I basically treat everybody the same anyway, so my humor's not going to change.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. So I don't struggle with it as much.
Yeah. Because I think now, because I started pretty late. I started when I was 29. Mm. And I think when you're a little older and you're like, There's more, I guess.
You have more layers to chip away.
Yeah.
More coats to pull off.
And there's more. It's just more security because it's just like, okay, I'm almost. I'm in my 30s, and I'm there's. You have to be somewhat comfortable with yourself,
yeah.
And it's just sort of like, this is me. This is who I am. So this is what I'm going to bring, and I'm just going to try to make whatever it is I'm presenting palatable. Yeah. All this darkness, trying to make it palatable. Because I'm watching you at that the last show we did at that restaurant. Mm-hmm. It was just you were going in.
Oh,
like,
was I?
I felt like you were like. Mm. Because that was the first time that I actually got the chance to sit down and, like, listen.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, you were talking about some heavy shit.
Oh, yeah. Like
were you just like, I'm just going to do... Okay, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
You like the Zip-Coon thing. I don't know. It was just... It was some other stuff that was, like, heavy. And it was just like, I was like, all right.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I liked it. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
Take something.
Do you have to get to a point where you do, where there's like, because it seems like there's got to be some type of fearlessness that happens.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, am I ready to talk about this now? Or did you ever have that, like in, like early on when you were at my level? This is like a nerd.
Yeah,
person.
Yeah. It's a process. You get better at being yourself. It's like you go through this whole thing just to be yourself. I tell you what's changed with me in the last maybe year on stage, where everybody's starting to feel the same to me. No matter what room I go in, it's like I'm here. I'm about to talk. I'm comfortable in this space.
Right.
Now I can say, if it comes to my mind,
I can say it. Yeah.
You know, because I know where it's coming. I guess that's what finding your voice is like.
Right.
I'm knowing where my heart and my mind and my shit is, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not in my head thinking, oh my God, there's this person, these people don't like me, that guy there, there's a white person,
yeah.
It's my sweater. No.
Yeah.
You know. Oh my God, I'm being conservative. I mean, I just don't give a fuck. And then I just shove my shit down their throats and then just
you and you just don't you
and,
just don't
and
care.
Stay open for them to get back and like, play with them, you know?
right
just keep it light and keep it I started using more of an improv technique where you're open. I know what the fuck I'm gonna say,
yeah,
but you're open anyway, and you can't be uncomfortable in improv. You have to be
vulnerable in the
light.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to, I think that's something that I'm working on. Cause it's like, you have the, like the materials, I got the material, but it's part of it's just like being present, like just being fully present. Like cause I started off that show and the owner of the restaurant, cause they didn't have a host, and the owner was just like,
it was ridiculous.
It was so weird. And I kind of figured, I was like, I'm probably going to be doing a longer set.
Mm.
And I ended up doing an hour, but he's like, okay, this is the comic and here's Chris. And and they turned off the music, and the music was like, how are we doing on time? Are we good?
Yeah. I'm just making sure no one's calling.
Okay,
nephew's coming back.
Okay, cool. So they were playing like some videos, like, and like the song was like walking on sunshine, and they cut it off, and I heard somebody say,
oh really?
And after he brought me up, I was like, damn, you guys came for a comedy show not to hear music, 80s tunes, right? And I just riffed on that, and then I was like, okay, now we're here. And so I'm noticing like just incremental progress, and I'm like making notations of that, like as I listen to myself, and just say, oh, because it's got to be more than just the jokes.
Yeah, I feel like your act will hold you back sometimes.
Yeah,
it'll be so stuck in you, you get on autopilot and you can't shake from it. Like I'm always trying to shake my set, like get away from it, find something new that I've written down, but it hasn't come to me, or I've had the balls to say or whatever.
Yeah.
Because when I write it, if it comes out, if I've written it down, it's for a reason, and there's a tickle in there somewhere.
Yeah,
I just have to be comfortable enough to say it, deliver it, you know what I mean?
Right.
And feel it. Because
that happened to me. Like, that happened to me, like, that weekend. And I was trying to work out a story about my dad, and I said, well, I'll just do it now. I've got time. Kyle's going to get here probably late.
Get loose.
And I was like, I'm going to do it. And I did it. And I was like, oh, that wasn't so bad.
It was refreshing.
And then that same week, I had like shows in the city doing bar shows. And I was like, I have it now. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, you know, there's more work to be done on it, but it's just
window
like,
opens and closes. Yeah. Sometimes it's like,
I was like, I got it. And then that's something I'm going to keep knocking down. But so it's like that part to me is fun too. Like, it's just like, just thinking of it as like, I don't know, I guess the sport of it, like the game of it, to just like, it's fun performing, but then it's like, oh, well, what else can happen from this? Like, I always say, like, being like Peyton Manning, like, just being really like a student of it. And then
if you get to go to the cellar and you see Louis C.K. show up, or Chris Rock show up, and they're so fucking good, and if your set could embarrass you, you'd be like, I feel like if my set is whack, I'd be like, I feel like. Like, I'll kill them. Like, at another club, I'll come there and watch these guys sometimes and be like, fuck.
Well, yeah, like, so I do that sometimes. Like, well, I went to see him when he was working on, like, the BET Awards, I guess. The first time that he...
Chris Rock?
Yeah, when he was doing, this might have been May, and he came down to do the Stress Factory. Mm-hmm. And I went to the first show, and you could still see, like, this guy that's been, like... super successful, you could still see like the fire in his eyes. Yeah. Like he was still present, and he did like an hour and a half, and he was like, I got these jokes, man. Yeah. And it was an honest, you know, so to see him like that was just like,
like, what do you want to do? Like, you see performers performing into their late 80s. It's like, why would you want to do anything else? You know, what are you going to do? Sit and fucking play shuffleboard in Florida?
Yeah.
And you could be out there still doing what you love and people still enjoying it.
Yeah.
Until you die, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, did you see Top 5?
Yeah, I did.
That scene where he goes to the cellar and, like, that's like my favorite scene. Because he just, like, kind of, like... Oh yeah, this is what I'm missing. This is what the part of my life that I need back and all that. I want to ask you a couple more questions just about how does having your beautiful daughter, how does that change you? How does that change you like as a man, and how does that filter into your comedy?
I think it's anchored me. You know, like I feel like me, my woman and my baby are a trinity now, so it's like this is my power source, and then I got to go out and provide, and you know what I mean. And
yeah,
it's definitely I'm fighting for something other than myself, really.
Okay,
it's like, and then it gives me energy.
So you're like Dame Dash.
Yeah.
Did you see his Breakfast Club interview?
Yeah, I did.
I think he was dropping some gems a little bit.
Yeah, Dame is smart. He got that street knowledge. I know. Dame, he's I don't know him personally, but you know, when I see him speak, he's still living by the code, you know. I see where he's coming from.
Yeah,
you
know? I could see it too. I was like, I know what it's just. I think it's just the way that it was coming out, the way that it was being. But I understood what he was saying,
and what he said about ownership of your own shit. It's like now we can distribute our own music and put it out there and promote it because we have the means to do it. But we still so locked in the way it was.
Yeah, because my daddy did it and his daddy did it.
We too scared to change how it is, you know. Like what he was telling Charlamagne, you mean to tell me they couldn't take this over here to their side and still make it work?
Right,
they
right.
could, but, who, you know, it's like... You know, I'm already here. See, they already built me up. It's like, well, you have access to the people still. Mm-hmm. But now you still have access to the people because there's other ways for the people to get your shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I feel that struggle, and I think it's going to I think if things keep going the way that they're going, like the natural progression, I'm going to be faced with that, the false security, I'm making quotation marks to the listeners. But... Of I have a paycheck coming in every day, every week, every 2 weeks, and I have insurance and all this. But you're still kind of beholden to them, but then it's like on the outside where comedy is just like, I'm just in those two worlds where it's like, yeah, I have a boss, but then I'm using that to help the quote unquote dream.
You mean with your day job?
Yeah,
no, but I mean, you gotta eat.
Yeah,
you
know what I'm saying?
It took me 5 years to quit my day job.
Really?
And use that to fund what I'm doing now. You know? And
did you get any brushback from your family? Were they like,
My mother, my mother first like, you better keep that good job. I wouldn't quit no job.
Right.
You know, but, yeah. My family starts seeing me here and there, and I don't beg nobody for no money.
Right.
As long as I don't ask for money, they don't
care.
You know,
right. Yeah. Okay.
And they see I still move and do what I do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I've never gotten anything from anybody. Some just pride. They're proud of some of the things I've done, you know, so.
And I wanted to ask you this too. When it comes to, do you know about respectability politics, all that stuff, like where it's like, where some celebrities or some black personalities will be on TV and they say, oh, if we just pull our pants up, we won't get killed. That's basically what it is in a nutshell, like the self-respect of it all, and there's no blame to be on like white people or the majority. How do you have a take on that at all? Like Don Lemon, like I always say, he had like a heel turn where he like a evil wrestler. You go bad. He's like,
I don't know if pulling your pants up will help anything. But it's the same joke that Dave Chappelle did when he said, you're not a whore, but you're all wearing a whore's uniform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that style is associated to criminal activity, to whatever criminal
element,
jailhouse, blah, blah, blah. So a white officer who don't know you and ain't looking at you like a nephew or a cousin or whatever.
Who's not your pal.
Yeah, coach. Exactly. May see you and sniff you out as a different animal.
Yeah.
And in his own fear and insecurity will have him kill you. So that it's both, you know, it's like, it's an unfortunate, I see how shit be happening, you know.
Yeah, because
I see how that could happen.
Because it is like a paradox where it's like, damn, where was I going to go?
Because trust
like,
me, not only white people see black kids dressed a certain way, and it vibrates them a little bit. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, because Common, like a couple days ago, people were mad at him. People are mad at him now because he said, I think he said on the Daily Show, he said that black people need to reach out to white people with love and then things will be better. And what I want to ask you now is, can he still be in my top five? Can I still? Because Common had some.
It depends on what situation he's still. Like, you know, love. We all have to. I think just to associate with other human beings, you have to approach them with love.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because I think it'll work out better for you. It's a better, unless they're fucking spitting in your face.
Right.
Then,
right.
You know, it's whatever, you know.
Sure.
But, unless he's saying, don't have a chip on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know some people walk into a certain situation and already have judged it and be on the defensive, which isn't coming from a good point of view. So it's going to make, you can't communicate good like that.
Right.
I mean? It's not, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because I get what he's saying, and I get why people are upset, because Kendrick Lamar said in a Billboard article recently, Billboard story recently, that, the black community has to have self-love. We gotta love each other and have self-respect in order to progress. And people took, they were
pissed at him. Because people simplify something they say and make it seem like that's all he said.
Yeah, and you understand what I'm saying? It was frustrating to me because I know that dude's music. I know that kid's music. Mm. And the stuff that he's putting out into the world ain't about, no, it's about like some positive, beautiful shit. And so people are like, oh, fuck Kendrick, he's an idiot, he's dumb. And he puts out this album on, have you heard it yet?
I haven't heard it yet.
It's really black. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Like, it's really black. And what it's like about self-love, self-respect. And it's entertaining. It's not like he's on a pulpit, but it's just the aura that it puts out is just like this. It's like some black.
So should I spend $10.99 on it?
Yeah, I'm gonna try to. I don't know if the hard copy's out yet, but
we should not get the bootleg. No. Well, I mean, let me stop. I want to help the community.
Yeah, it's really good, and that's kind of what I got from it. It's like. Because there's this Grantland article about this song that he came out with that's on the album called The Black of the Berry. Mm-hmm. And one of the writer was trying to compare it to Nina Simone's Young, Gifted, and Black. You know that song?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it was like, that song is for black people, but it also gives non-black people a window to look inside of what the community's going through, or what the, you know, just like the a way to observe, a way to get a peek into the culture or self-love and all that stuff. It's exclusive but inclusive at the same time, basically. And I think that's what that album is. And it just, like, that's what, and I, that just dawned on me today.
Yeah, I gotta check it out.
It's really, because it's really great. Now, and it just seems like now, when certain black celebrities get to a certain height, that they're just like, racism's not that bad, you guys. Mm. It's, come on. Mm. And it's like, now Common's gonna do that, like, he gets the Oscar, and now it's just like, dude, come on, man. How do you feel about that? Do you even see that? Do you notice it? Do you even care? What do you think?
I see the position they're in. It's like when you're doing business with people, and a lot of times for a lot of these projects to work, like on the set, anything, there has to be a lot of love. Like the makeup artists, the choreographers, it's all a bunch of creative people together.
Yeah.
And when you approach life like that, the shit works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you're these artists working with other great artists who are all coming together, and you basically on a movie set of the shit that they're doing is an artist community.
It's
nothing but love, unless you get a douchebag who stands out, and you're like, oh, that director's a fucking douche. Yeah. And even then, people still kind of, you know, float around that, and you know how to deal with it because you're still open, because, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's how a lot of artists, once they get to a certain level and they see how, you know, how much they're prospering, they're getting money, they're feeding off of this culture that they live in, and then they suggest it to everybody. Maybe it's like, you know, we need to love each other and approach things. You know, I was on a baseball team. When I got on a baseball team, we didn't see we were all, you know, that was our catcher, this was this person, that person. We wasn't like, oh, it's a fucking black catcher.
Yeah.
The Asian shortstop is the fucking, the coaches are white, the umpires are white. It wasn't on that.
Yeah.
So it was like you approached all these people with love, and that's what we produced, a good baseball team.
Cause see, that's kind of how I look at it, but it's like, I kind of see it the same way. Like, be good to people. That doesn't mean that there's gonna not being and I'm going to be unaware of race and everything, but I think sometimes people take things too far, but maybe that's just me.
I think the problem with where society's at right now as far as us is this wasn't how it was supposed to be. We always say slavery. Slavery's hack already, because what happened after that was what made it fucked up. like it started with Wilmington, North Carolina. Wilmington was I told the story on stage. I don't know if I did, but I didn't.
Okay.
But it was it's the first time the U.S. government has been an elected government has been overthrown. It was a coup.
Okay.
Wilmington was a predominantly black town. They had like firemen, police officers. Like, it was a well-run town. It was a port city.
Yeah.
They had money. They were prosperous. It was after, you know, you had skilled laborers.
Mm-hmm.
And but you had a lot of poor people who were in the war, who were starving, who were ex-soldiers. They got like 2,000 of them, got their old Gatling guns from the war, went, rioted, took the town, killed everybody. They had an elected government. It was like a white mayor. It was it was a mixed cabinet. You know what I mean? It was this mixed city. It was like what Obama type shit, but back then. And then they took the town. It was like, and then the president didn't respond because the governor said, "Nah, we got it." And then from then until 1920, like all over the South, they was like, you know, because they were all in the same situation.
Jesus,
you know what I'm saying? You look at blacks were like the Mexicans of 1800s because they were skilled laborers, you know, blacksmiths, everything, knew everything. And most of the immigrants that were here were from Europe.
And they didn't know all that stuff.
No, they didn't. And they were damn near slaves themselves because a lot of them had to pay for their passage over here.
You know, like indentured servitude.
Yeah, just to get here, a trip wasn't free. You owed whoever got you here. You had to work for them for 2 years or 3 years. But the only difference with a slave is once you worked a certain amount of time, you were able to enter into society.
Yeah.
You
know? Wow. What year was that? Like early 1800s?
From 1865. This happened in 1899.
1899.
Because, like, you know, after slavery, people knew that, you know, politics was the lick, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was the big man. You could either be a politician, a senator, or something. So people were trying to get their stuff together, but it was like, you know.
Yeah,
damn. A lot of the South was poor, broke, suffering. They said, "Nah, we ain't gonna have that. We have guns."
Oh my God!
But it's just like Black Wall Street and all those other places where it all happened. This that wasn't the only time. This happened everywhere. But could you imagine?
Because that's the one you hear about. Now, what is that? Oklahoma?
That was Oklahoma. That
okay, all right.
Oklahoma.
Good, I'm not that.
But then you had another place in Arkansas, too, that happened, where they tried to start a farmers union. Because, you know, we had farm, we worked farms for fun.
Is that what, is that before or after Melvin Tolson from The Great Debaters? Because he was like a farmer, he was like a union guy, right?
I'm
trying to remember. I don't know.
Yeah, he tried to establish a union of farmers in Arkansas. I don't know if it was the same guy.
Okay.
But they said, "Nah, we're not having that."
Yeah.
And killed everybody. And then you had the law. The federal government wasn't getting involved, so the people handled it locally, you know?
I don't know how you feel about this, but it just seems like when a lot of racial stuff happens, and we'll close out, and like people get so surprised by it, and it just doesn't.
Yeah, but I think if all the history events didn't happen, how society would be a different place and how we'd be perceived, because it's like now we all have to assimilate in order to, you know, to work for somebody or maybe whatever, and then, you know, get in and do what we do. But those kind of communities, it would have been at least somewhat even or more even, because we at least have a grasp of areas.
Right.
If we didn't fuck them up. But
we just got to
pull our pants up. But you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah,
and
no,
I,
yeah.
And it's like, now what do we do? Are we going to get back that farmer's mentality and that the way we were? I don't think so. I think we assimilate or whatever. I don't know what to do. And what we can do, I mean.
I don't know.
Except for become part of this American machine, I think. Assimilation, is that what it is?
And there you have it. There's no hope. just get it while you can.
Could you imagine that, you know, we still had North Carolina, And you know, Atlanta, eventually we got that.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's everything. Everything is like North Carolina. Like, everybody, every black person probably has some roots down there.
Atlanta,
yeah, North Carolina. You know, like a lot of people. I was kind of fascinated when I moved to Chicago. All the people that were up there in the city sounded like they were from the South, but that's where the job people
Jersey,
would migrate.
Jersey and Harlem is nothing but people from North Carolina. So we may be first, second generation,
mm-hmm.
and that's another thing too. I think one guy was W.E.B. Du Bois mm-hmm. was trying to tell us to stop running to the cities, mm-hmm. stay in the farms, take care of the farms, stay farmers, because you know. People always need food. You always need farming. You know, there's money in that.
Yeah.
But we run to the city and we want to be sophisticated and become
get those cocks.
Consumers. Yeah, you know what I mean? You want to be consumers.
Wear suits.
You know?
Yeah. Damn, Kyle.
Land. Farm the land, man. And I'll come in your city and tell you jokes.
So basically we get back to the agrarian society and, yeah. You know,
go to Colorado, grow some weed, grow some,
farming. It's legal now.
Yeah, man. We stop being farmers and we want to be ballers, rappers, entertainers.
Nobody ever brings that up,
and that's
though.
What that whole Zip Coon song is about, is that all we'll ever play is Zip Coon. That's our fucking...
Can you explain that? Because I don't think everybody... Just briefly explain. Now, don't do the joke.
No.
Don't do your bit. Don't burn the bit, but...
No.
I guess everybody can look it up then.
Yeah, the song is a song called "Old Zip Coon,"
mm-hmm.
and it's a parody. It's mocking black people in America, black culture,
mm.
and it's like old Zip Coon. He was entertaining, so he was able to get through. It was just the life of his entertainer, Zip Coon. He's, you know, and but one part of the song is redeeming because it says. Oh, Zip Coon goes to Washington or something like he gonna be president, like mocking as if Zip Coon would ever become president.
Mm.
And you know that's the only redeeming because the song's pretty long.
It's because you did most.
I did
of
two
it.
Paragraphs.
Okay, because I was like
I did the first paragraph describes Zip Coon. The second one is about the old Zip Coon and the black woman.
Okay,
then the other one goes Zip Coon and his little coony kids,
uh-huh.
and then Zip Coon goes to Washington. It's like a whole all the paragraphs is a different little who's he, you know?
Because there was a point I was like, he's really going in.
Yeah, I wonder about that joke. I'm like, am I committing? Is this too much for a comedy show, or does this turn into spoken?
I was just impressed. I was like, oh, he's going there. It wasn't like I don't think this should be in a club.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, because when you see people do, because it's like I was just listening to Louis's latest special driving down here. I was like. Oh, you can take, when you just see a vet do something, like when I watch you, just, oh, you can do that. Like, that's a technical thing. You that boundary can be crossed, or that thing can be done. So it's like, okay, how does that fit in what I do? It's like, oh, well, Kyle did this thing. He explored this in his way.
Okay. Well,
that's how I look at it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I wasn't like, ew, I am...
He's in the club, he's singing. Why don't you go do musical theater?
No. I was just like, oh shit, because it was very, that room was, it was a big room, but it was really intimate, and it was just like it was like, oh, and they were into it. They had a good time.
Yeah, as long as once they start listening, I think I have enough jokes in it.
Yeah.
That I can at least get them to giggle.
How do you feel about that dance though? It's like. I'm dancing. It's like you're doing your thing, the showbiz thing, but you're black and you're a black man and all that. Do you ever think about that at all? Like that the dichotomy is like, yeah, I'm doing my jokes and I'm quote unquote dancing for you guys.
Yeah, it's like but you chose to be an entertainer.
Yeah,
and that's like. It's like I can't choose to be in and complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I guess I have to have dignity in how I.
Yeah. That's you know, okay. That's the answer I'm looking for. Yeah,
you know, like I recognize Coonan now. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
what Coonan is to me.
Right.
It's
right.
Like,
right.
When I see it, I read. Like,
yeah.
But I don't know. Like I know sometimes even when I'm could be Coonan myself personally.
Oh really?
But I get you know you try to be conscious of it. I guess it's the thing that made Dave Chappelle. get freaked out because you're like, I'm a comic and I have a dirty, dark sense of humor. I can laugh at something, even if it's vile to myself. But you know, but when you put it out there, just like if people will see that one thing and not explain the whole of who you are and what you know, what you really meant by it, they just simplify it to this one little nugget that makes them want to judge you. Like, hey, I'm fucking. You know what I mean? So, I do this thing with this waiter at the comedies at Dangerfields.
Okay.
He's like 80 something years old, old white guy named Chario, and he does a lot of race jokes. And then I do this thing where I play with him, hey Chario, and I set him up for him to do this fucking racial joke. And it kind of reminds me of old vaudeville. Like, hey, you know, a funny thing happened to me. And then the guy said, and I'm the butt of the joke, wah, wah, at the end, you know?
Yeah.
And it could be a little like, you know, I'm sure if the NAACP saw that act, they'd be like, this is inappropriate.
They'd get the drop squad on you.
Exactly. But it's fucking funny, man, to me. And it's doesn't be a douchebag. But I still kill him. I get him at the end, but.
Yeah. Because it seems like it seems like that's an added thing that black performers have to
be concerned about. Yeah.
What is black Twitter going dignity. To say about this joke? How are
you
they going
to
feel?
Have dignity about everything. Everything got to be dignified. Can we just be dumb sometimes?
Because sometimes you see actors in these in shows and stuff. Yeah. They're like. They deliver their lines and it's just like it's like about like their head's about to explode because they're trying to be so dignified. It's like you're a bank teller, just just give the guy his money or whatever.
People forget is this is entertainment. Entertainment is a luxury. Like you know, if someone's cutting down trees is a bigger concern of yours than fucking what an entertainer's doing because you know. That's where you're supposed to be at, out and doing shit. If you choose to sit your ass down and be entertained, how could you make them responsible for how you feel?
Right.
And how you know, it's like,
yeah.
We've become that connected to our entertainment that, like, most of the shit that happens to people never happens to us on a personal level.
Right.
But we walk around feeling tension because of racism, tension because of sexism, tension because of everything that we may not have even experienced personally ourselves. Mm. But because of our entertainment is part of our brain and part of our psyche and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's like, but we forget that. It's like, why should this person be responsible for if he can... being a role model. That's just weird.
There you have it. Kyle Grooms is not a role model, you guys. It's not going to be your role model. Well, Kyle, thanks so much.
I just roll with models.
Swag.
And my baby and my woman.
Kyle, thanks so much for letting me hang with you, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. It was a good time.
All right.
You have a problem finding a place? You okay?
No, I'm good. I'm just going to...
Sweet.
All right, take it easy, everybody.